Okay. So the K-band, the evolution of the K-band luminosity functions of galaxies as a function of redshift has been proposed as a strong test of the assembly of galaxies through merging. And this is what's shown in this plot, which compares the evolution of the K-band luminosity function in a standard hierarchical picture, which is shown by the green line, compared to a prediction from a standard passive luminosity evolution model where most of the massive galaxies in the universe formed in a burst at high redshift. And as you can see, as you go to higher and higher redshift, the discrepancy at the bright end becomes bigger and bigger. Note that the faint ends remain relatively indistinguishable. So you really want to be probing the abundance of these very bright, fairly bright galaxies at high redshifts. And being a recent study, this is using photometric redshifts in a number of fields by Fontana et al. What this shows is the cumulative number density of galaxies in a survey limited to K of 21 that lie above the given redshift. And so here you see results from different fields, including the Hubble Deep Field North and South. They've obtained photometry, multicolor photometry, and derived photometric redshifts for all their galaxies. And this gives you some idea of the field-to-field scatter, because they're fairly small fields, so you might wonder how much large-scale structure is affecting the results. And this shows you the solid line is the mean result that's found, and this compares to the predictions of the standard PLE model. And you see the PLE model produces a strong excess of bright galaxies at high redshifts, and all the hierarchical models lie closer to the results. So this needs to be confirmed, but is tantalizing evidence that at least the most massive galaxies in are not being seen in infrared at high redshifts. Now I want to turn to some features of what would be predicted for the properties of elliptical galaxies formed by mergers. So I'm going to pose this as a series of questions. So one thing that's often asked is, can you obtain a mass-metallicity relation for ellipticals if they form by, in particular, near-dissipationless mergers? And the answer is yes, provided that some process sets up a mass-metallicity relation for disk galaxies, and that process is feedback, which would selectively drive out metals from low-luminosity disk galaxies. Even if ellipticals form from essentially dissipationless mergers of disks, this mass-metallicity relation would be preserved, because hierarchical mergers don't occur randomly. You can show that massive ellipticals form from the mergers of more massive disks on average. So in this picture, if metals are ejected more efficiently from low-mass disks than from high-mass disks, then you can set up a mass-metallicity relation for the disk galaxies. You need feedback to be relatively strong for this metallicity luminosity relation to carry over to the highest luminosity things. This preferred model, as I'll show, is the high feedback model. It has mass ejection rates which are greater than the star formation rates, even in galaxies as bright as our own Milky Way, which might seem fairly extreme, but that's what's required. Otherwise, this relation turns over at high masses where the galaxy becomes a closed box, essentially. And then when you let those disk galaxies merge together and form in ellipticals, and you look at the metallicity luminosity relation of the early type galaxies, say in clusters, then you get a relation, you still get a metallicity luminosity relation with some scatter that's shown in these semi-analytic models, and an age luminosity relation which is roughly constant getting towards younger ages for the most luminous things. And that's how you could propose that you could set up a colored magnitude relation for early type galaxies. So you can use the models of Stefan Charlot as a function of mesolicities to translate your results into colors as a function of magnitude. And in the high feedback model, you manage to get a slope which matches that of the data obtained by Bauer, Lucy, and Ellis reasonably well. And I'll come back to the issue of the scatter later on. Okay. So essentially that's my next topic. Do elliptical galaxies formed by mergers have very uniform properties? And the answer is it depends where you look. In clusters, and especially in the cores of clusters, ellipticals are very old, and they'll have small scatter in color. In low-density environments, ellipticals are predicted to be younger and have large scatter, as already been referred to by many people. So if you look at the, I'll put up, this is the third time it's been shown, the famous Van Dokkum diagram. You go to your favorite lambda CDM cosmology, and you have no trouble, in fact, fitting this evolution in clusters. So I've selected ellipticals lying inside the viral radius of a cluster. You get the right trend with redshift, and I don't plot here the scatter in the model, but it's smaller than what Peter actually gets out. But there is a prediction that things should change as you go out into the field. So here, what I've plotted is, now I've turned from mass light ratios to colors, and these are colors, pure colors from stellar evolution, no dust extinction. I've plotted the color as a function of radius from the centers of clusters expressed in units of the viral radius of the cluster. So all the studies of Peter and most other groups lie within about half a viral radius or so, and you can see within this region, the scatter in V minus K is very small. You get only small color gradients. You have to start going out to 1.5, 2 viral radii before you start to see this trend and this increase in scatter in the field. So this shows you the results for ellipticals. This is the results for disks, which are the same. They also show the same color gradient. There's a greater scatter in the colors of disks at a given radius than the colors of ellipticals inside the cluster. So the CNOC people have studied some of these color gradients. This is from the cluster analyzed by Abraham et al. At Bell 2390. This is a cluster for which the viral radius is about 1.5 H inverse megaparsecs. They go to 2.3. That's their outermost point. And you can start to see a mild color gradient in this red envelope, which agrees quite well with what we get. But it would be nice to go further out even than that. Then it's not classified Bohr morphology. These are their so-called star-forming butcher armor component they just made it. I don't have a morphology-selected color gradient that doesn't exist, so I'll just show you that for the whole sample. Well, maybe the CNOC people have that, but they can tell me later. So the next question is, do elliptical galaxies form in mergers that are dissipationless or dissipational? And this has important consequences for the internal structure of ellipticals, as was discussed yesterday. Now, there's a fairly strong prediction from the hierarchical models. In the models, there is a trend that galaxies will get more gas-rich at high redshift. And because low-luminosity ellipticals form preferentially at high redshift, they will form in more gas-rich mergers than high-luminosity ellipticals, which assemble later. And that is the origin of this plot, which has already been shown, which shows you the log of the fraction of gas divided by stars as a function of the V-band magnitude of the elliptical identified at the present day. So you see that the most massive ellipticals form in mergers involving only a few percent of gas, and the most, compared to the less luminous ones, where you can have as much or more gas than stars. this is you're looking at the last major merger, which formed the elliptical, and just dividing the amount of gas and the progenitors divided by the stellar mass. This is average over all halos. So if you believe that major mergers are responsible for the formation of bulges and black holes, that the same process does both, then you might stick your neck out and make a prediction that if we know that there exists a correlation between bulge mass and black hole mass with quite a large amount of scatter, and we can model this and we can say, where does the scatter come from in the model? That comes from the fact that for black holes that formed in bulges that are forming late, such as isolated elliptical galaxies, there's less gas available, so these should have preferentially smaller black holes than ellipticals which formed early. That's just an aside. I won't get into that because it's not part of this talk. Ask Martin. So here are some trends. I think there are still outstanding problems in understanding the properties of ellipticals in the merger picture. One thing which I think is very ill understood and needs further study is the origin of the enhanced alpha to iron element ratios in elliptical galaxies. And the traditional interpretation is that this can be used as a kind of a clock for star formation. So if you have enhanced alpha to Fe ratios, that meant that star formation was over and all the gas was used up in a time scale before the supernova type 1 had time to enrich anything. There is an observational trend that Mg over Fe shows it increases for more massive elliptical galaxies. And that, in this interpretation, is hard to understand because, as I've showed you, more massive elliptical galaxies assemble later and thus have more extended star formation time scales and less massive ellipticals. So that's something that doesn't seem to fit into the traditional interpretation. The second is the trends in the mass to light ratios of ellipticals as a function of mass, as was already mentioned in the discussion yesterday. Here I plot stellar, just pure stellar mass to light ratios in the model, shown as dots in V and K. As you see, you don't get a slope, even with chemical enrichment included, that matches the M over L, which is derived from measuring the velocity dispersions inside the effective radius. So just understanding the stars doesn't seem to be enough. Maybe this has something to do with the fact that dark matter ratios are varying as a function of mass inside the elliptical. Maybe there's some other explanation. This is present day mass to light, stellar mass to light ratio, present day, just in V and K. Okay, I should get to bulge formation. So as we've heard, I think in terms of explaining the properties of bulges and disks, there are two main formation mechanisms. One can be classified as bulge first and disk later. The bulge either forms by some kind of hierarchical mergers, and the disk then grows onto that. And in this view, the bulges are simply an extension of the elliptical sequence. The second alternative you might propose that the low angular momentum material in the halo forms the bulge, as pointed out by Fundenbosch, in which case the bulges would be more a continuation of the disk itself. But both scenarios have the consequence that the bulges are older than the disks, firstly. And if you go to fixed environments, because it takes time to grow your disk, then the age of the bulge should correlate with the Hubble type of the galaxy in the sense that the bulges of spirals ought to be, of late type spirals, ought to be older than the bulges of early type spirals. Obviously, if you compare different environments, you can mix up things because of different formation time scales. So let me just show you a cartoon of the scenario in these sort of hierarchical semi-analytic models, the idea is that the disk forms in the halo center from the cooling of gas, and satellite galaxy can spiral in via dynamical friction and merge to form a bulge, and then if new gas can cool, it can grow a new disk. So then if you look, say, just in the field, then there's a correlation between the V-luminosity, the weighted age of the stars in the bulge as a function of bulge-to-disk ratio in the sense that early-type bulges are younger than late-type bulges. If that's the only mechanism operating. Alternatively, there are models, as we heard, where the disk forms first and the bulge forms later through bar instabilities, perhaps. And I think, as Ben Moore will talk about later, maybe this operates more effectively in some environments than others, such as in clusters where galaxies can be disturbed by the surrounding objects and so on. And the consequence of this model is there should be no large age difference between disk and bulge, and perhaps ellipticals are older than the bulges. So I think that there's evidence, as we heard, that bulges are probably not a one-parameter family. As you go from late types to early types, there's evidence that that you go from exponential bulges to r to the quarter bulges. This is work by Andriakis, Pelletier, and Volsels, where they fitted profiles to the bulges, and you can see that n of equals 4 is de Vaucouleurs, n equals 1 is exponential, and it's fairly strong correlation what n you get with bulge-to-disk ratio. In terms of the ages of the bulges, I think people, as we heard from Dave Kuth, there's some agreement now that people find that the inner regions of bulges are older than the disks, such as the study by Abraham, which he just looked at fitting in the HDF, fitting at the colors of the inner regions versus the colors of the outer regions, and concluded that the bulge was probably older than the disk. But the comparison of bulge age between different morphological types less clear. I found this recent tantalizing preprint by Harold Kunstner, where he's looked at relative ages of ellipticals and S0s in the Fornax cluster using line strength indices to separate age and metallicity effects. And there are very interesting correlations that come out of this. So in this plot, the solid symbols are the ellipticals in the Fornax cluster, and the things I've colored in red are the S0s. So what you see is that the ellipticals and the S0s seem to split up into two classes. The ellipticals are older, and the S0s are mainly younger. You should caution that most of these S0s are also lower velocity dispersions. They're smaller intrinsic potential wells than the ellipticals. The two that are as massive as the ellipticals seem to be as old as the ellipticals. But moreover, as well as being younger, if they look at the MG over FE, these S0s have solar. They're not enhanced in alpha elements compared. So the interpretation that Kunstner puts forward is that these low luminosity S0s are actually have a disk origin rather than a merger origin like the ellipticals. That these might be the harassed population of spirals. Well, whatever your model is for explaining the origin of morphologies, I think it wants to be able to do a number of things. It wants to be able to match the distribution of morphologies at a given magnitude, as shown here, where they've separated the SSRS luminosity function split by morphological type. And you can see that as you go toward faint galaxies are dominated by late types. And as you go towards the bright galaxies, the fraction of early types tends to increase. And you can explain that fairly naturally. Yeah. You can explain that fairly naturally in the merger scenario. Because you merge galaxies to form the early types, then it does come out quite naturally that your early type galaxies are brighter than your late type galaxies. The other thing you want to be able to match is the morphology density relation. And to do this, you start to have to look at the distribution of morphologies of galaxies inside spiralized regions, such as clusters, to try and look at how the gradients evolve as a function of redshift. And some recent work is what we tried to do by looking inside high-resolution N-body simulations, identifying galaxies using the merger trees provided by the simulations, plus these recipes for semi-analytic recipes for star formation and so on, to look at morphology as a function of radius inside the cluster. So the very simple assumption that's made in this analysis is that ellipticals and bulges are only produced by mergers. There's no other mechanism to produce bulges. And the galaxies are classified in terms of their bulge-to-disk ratio. And what you see is that morphology gradients arise quite naturally. If you plot the fraction of ellipticals as a function of R over R200, as is shown by the red line, at all redshifts, you see that it goes up towards the center, reaching fractions of 60-70%. This is for galaxies bulged to total greater than 0.4, and it declines. You don't see any great evolution with redshift. So if I plot the fraction of early type, well, fraction of elliptical galaxies, where ellipticals are those things formed by mergers, inside a variable radius as a function of redshift, there's quite a large scatter from cluster to cluster, but no large decrease with redshift. And then what we did is to try and compare at low redshift to the morphology gradients from the fairly old work now of Whitmore, Gilmore, and Jones. And what they did was to take the 55 clusters from Dresler and stack them and rescale the radius to essentially a radius where the galaxy's interior to that radius had fixed surface density. So this is, in a sense, equivalent to scaling by R over R200. It's not exactly the same, but we could do the same procedure in our simulations. And what you find, what we've done, because we don't know what the correspondence between bulge over total to these three morphological classes is, we've just made the assumption that we can split into three ranges in bulge over total and normalize at the outside, at the far outer regions corresponding to about three virial radii, and then look how the gradient goes, whether we can reproduce the gradients. And for ellipticals, it doesn't look too bad, but what we find is that we fail to reproduce the increase in the abundance of S0s towards the centers of clusters. We overproduce the numbers of spirals in the centers of rich clusters, which might suggest that this could be rectified by some mechanism which would preferentially convert spirals to S0s towards the centers. But maybe Ben will have a bit more to say about that. So let me conclude. I think the firm predictions for the merger picture, firstly, that the abundance of massive ellipticals needs to decline with redshift in the sense that the more massive ellipticals assemble later than less massive ones. And you would like to see that the ellipticals in high-density regions assemble earlier than those in low-density regions. Some natural outcomes are that the mass-metallicity relation in disks is preserved even after they merge, and that low-mass ellipticals form at high redshift in a gas-rich merging event, and that high-mass ellipticals form later in near-dissipationless mergers. And as thirdly, that we do get that you do find more ellipticals in high-density regions, whether the detailed shapes are right, that's another story. And open problems for the future, the origin of the enhanced alpha elements in ellipticals, structural properties. We need to combine some of the predictions for the way galaxies assemble in these hierarchical models with the kinds of simulations that Lars talked about to see whether we can explain trends in the structural properties of ellipticals. Thirdly, the origin of bulges. Is there one more than one mechanism? I think we'd like to see more studies of bulges, and especially perhaps also as a function of environment. And finally, the morphology radius relation and its evolution to high redshift, because that is really the key to understanding the origin of the Hubble sequence. So stop there.